Everybody, welcome to Drive Through HR, the most popular HR-centric, blog-tasted, 30-minute noontime central guest-hosted show on the inner tubes today, at the very least. In case you don't recognize the voices, it's been a while. This is Dwayne Lay of Dovetail Software, but I am sitting in today as guest host on Drive Through HR because our Intrepid Explorers are all off on assignment, traveling the world and seeing all the amazing Christmas, Hanukkah, and Festivus decorations that await them around the world. So, nice to be back. Good to see everybody. I know it's been a while because they've pulled all of my personal walk-up music off of the board. So, we came into a little Beastie Boys. Hope that got everybody going. I've got my can of frosting ready, which is how I got bribed into this gig. So, let's go ahead and jump right in. Our guest today, you may have heard his partner, Ken, on the show a few weeks back, but I have heard so many great things about this guy. I can't wait to spend an hour talking to Mr. Sean Murphy, co-CEO of Switched and Shift. Sean, how are you, sir?
I am well. I wasn't sure if I should bust out the glow sticks or bust out some, like break dancing. I wasn't sure, but I love the music.
Absolutely. Throw down a piece of cardboard, get out the boombox, right? It's an old school. Absolutely.
Do the windmill, hey.
No question. It's a virtual rave. That's what's happening on Drive Through HR today. So get your knee pads out and off we go. How you been?
Really good. The holidays are rapidly approaching, and that always is fun, but it introduces a bit of panic because there's always so much to do at the end of the year. But we're having fun, and that is what I focus on.
That's fantastic. That's exactly what we got to do this time of year. So if you would, for anybody who was careless enough to miss your partner on the show a couple of weeks back, or who has not yet heard of you, please tell the little folks a little bit about yourself. Not the little folks, tell all the folks a little bit about yourself, your show you got going there with Switch and Shift, and what lights you up.
Sure. So let's see here. So I have two worlds that I currently play in. So there's the world that that pays the bills, and that is the consulting work. And I do organizational change management, organizational development consulting, predominantly with government. So that actually makes for, a rich experience because it's, government tends to be hierarchical and bureaucratic, and there are, believe it or not, those executives who try to counter that with creating great places to work, which is a passionate topic of mine. So when I'm not consulting, I have, as you pointed out, I co-founded a blog with Ted Coyne called Switch and Shift. Our tagline is the human side of business, where we advocate that the management and leadership philosophies and the way we've run our businesses from the 20th century, though we're not throwing the baby out with the bathwater, we need to revisit some of our assumptions. And so we like to poke holes at what we have come to accept as the way things are and say, no, that's not good enough. So that's Switch and Shift. We recently launched a podcast of our own over on iTunes. You could find it called Work That Matters. And so between writing, I've got a book proposal that I'm finishing up this month, between the blog, the consulting, I'm a pretty busy guy. Now, you asked me what lights me up, and I think, aside from spending time with my family, I'm a workaholic, and I'm a workaholic because I love what I do. I get to help organizations create workplaces that are suitable for the employees, and that lights me up when I get to see the workplace transform and people actually go, hey, I like what I do.
And there's not nearly enough of that happening in the world. It's amazing when you've lived through the workplaces that it's the whole 8 hours in a shower mentality, and then you find something you truly care about. If you've never experienced it, it is life. It literally life changing. I mean, it will it'll do some amazing things for you. What inspired Switch and Shift? How did that come about? Like, what was there a lightning event? Was there something that happened where you just woke up one day and said this can't go on, or was it just a culmination of a lifetime of learning experiences?
It's probably the latter of the two. So Ted and I knew each other from our online interactions, and we, wrote blogs for each other, each other's individual blogs. And Ted had asked me, "Hey, why don't we join forces? You know, two heads are better than one." And I'm like, "No. I like what I'm doing." But it came to a point where his message and my message orbit each other so much so that it just made sense that we put our cachet together and say, "Let's do this." So it was born from this frustration of managers treating employees as though they're an asset. And one of the things that I write a lot about is, we need to get rid of this viewpoint that employees are resources, employees are assets. Those are finite. In reality, we are filled with infinite possibilities. So it's that kind of undercurrent in Ted's and my writing that brought us together. And Switch and Shift really started as a passion play, and now it's getting sticky. And so we're going, okay, let's make this stickier, and let's increase our efforts to make it a really great experience for everybody online. And next year, we're going to start looking at offline activities.
So, and one thing for anyone who's listening, if you're on the back channel, Sean's Twitter handle is SHAWMU. I know too often those are hard to track down when you want to tweet at somebody who's on the show, so make sure we put that out there. So your website's interesting. There's some really good information on there. I want to talk a little bit about this Business Heretics bookstore.
Yeah.
I think this is fascinating. I'm a believer there's not nearly enough books for people that have read them.
You're here.
Actually, one of my favorite lines from any Bare Naked Lady song is, "I don't buy everything I read. I haven't even read everything I've bought." I've got a shelf full of books I haven't been through. But I actually have read several of the books on here, and I'm a big fan of these. How do you pick the books? What's the idea behind this book list, and how did it come together?
So we actually are – this will be a big focus for 2014. We have a sister site, if you will, called U-Turn.com, which is run by Mark Babbitt. Mm-hmm. And so U-Turn is known, when they ask people, what do you think of who we are? They are, we're considered rebels. And Ted and I often considered ourselves, these heretics. And, so we've combined the two, and we're the rebel heretics. And what we're talking about is, a heretic is somebody who believes in something that isn't popular, but really thinks that, hey, we're missing the boat if we don't pay attention to, quote unquote, whatever this is. And so when we look at the books that are out there, we're looking for heretical, rebellious writers who say, you know what, we need to rethink what we've come to accept or believe. And so that's the genesis of how we choose the books. Now, there's another more practical, and we have on our site what we call the League of Extraordinary Thinkers. And these are writers whom we vetted. And so if they happen to be writers, part of the benefit they get is they could have their book on the site as well. So it's a combination of heretical thinking, rebellious thinking, and helping good thinkers, good writers promote their stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a really good list. Again, several of the books on here – Black Swan was amazing. I love No Excuses,
yeah.
Millennial CEO. I really enjoy these. I noticed my book's on your list, but we don't have to go into that discussion. Rework, actually. Rework is one. I forget who recommended this one to me, but actually this might be my favorite one on the whole thing. Rework is a fantastic book. I would absolutely recommend that one to anybody who asked. And I'll just throw this at you. There's a wonderful book that may fit in really nicely with this. It used to be called Glimmer. They renamed it. It's now Cad Monkeys, Dinosaur Babies, and T-Shaped People, I believe it is. And actually, Heather Buss.
Great title.
Glimmer was a lot easier to remember. It's an examination of design thinkers. And kind of how the world around them influences design and kind of how things come together. Absolutely brilliant book.
But I think would probably fit in really well with some of these others. So just to throw that up, Flow is another one that I've read. That
well,
we
you're
really
getting
nice.
Ready to redesign the site for January, and so part of that includes beefing up. That's a weird word for this.
Beefing up. I love it.
Really
no, that's
kind
a
of
new thing. We're going to do that. Yeah.
We're beefing up the book list. Yes, there we go. We made a new reference for it.
That's totally wizard. We're going to make that happen too.
I love it.
So let's talk a little more about. I know that you said you've got some real passion around optimism in the workplace and getting it more humanized. Tell me a little more about that. What is optimism in the workplace for you? Is it just people being happy? Is it just looking forward to work?
Yeah, no, that's a good question, and the answer is no. So there's the distinction that optimism is really a belief. And in some cases, our brains are hardwired to be whether we're optimistic or we're pessimistic. And I'm not going to get into the brain science because, well, I'm not a neuroscientist. But what I'm talking about is more of a cultural element that when I as an employee come to work or I as a manager come to work, I believe that there are good things possible from the hard work of myself and my team. And I believe that I can apply my strengths, and I mean that from a strengths philosophy, not like strengths as in competency. I can apply my strengths and that the work is meaningful, that I understand the bigger purpose. So when you kind of swirl these elements together, meaningful work, the possibility that is inherent in the work that we're doing, that I get to apply my strengths, that people actually feel, hey, this is a good deal or a good gig. I like this. So that's the optimism that I'm talking about is it's really an outcome from those inputs. So you could be a pessimistic person, and there's nothing wrong with that, and still feel like you can contribute your best in an environment that provokes hope, provokes that things are possible. And right now, the reason why it's so important to me is, I'm not going to recite the research because I'm imagining the listeners know this, that the engagement levels, the satisfaction levels, it's just the morale in workplaces are really bad. And executives, C-suite folks, they're pretty preoccupied with other activities. And I believe that the middle manager, who always has the greatest influence on their team, has a choice to make. They can choose to let the crappy workplace be crappy, or they can choose to create optimism. I advocate create optimism because you can actually make things better for your employees regardless of what the executives are doing or regardless of what other managers are doing for their teams. So,
So this actually plays very nicely into one of the things I was going to ask you later, but we'll just jump to it earlier. A lot of times when you get into these high-level discussions, it is very much you can make the change, you can do something different. On your on your site, you have this switch and shift change playbook. Now, I'm imagining that change playbook, which you can get just by going to the site switchandshift.com and signing up. See, we even plugged your site for you.
Thank you so kindly.
Yeah, no problem. I imagine that's got some tactical advice, some concrete kind of here's what you can go do, here's how you get started. If you would, what can you share just verbally with the folks listening that they can take away, even today, the rest of this week, and actually go and start to make a difference?
Well, so the first place that I think in this that's very actionable is the manager needs to sit down and really choose to take on this work because it's not easy work. It's contrarian work. So I think it starts with, okay, what's going on within my team and what is it that I'm doing and what is it that I'm not doing? So I think there's a conversation. The manager needs to look in the mirror. And I don't mean this from a therapy perspective, but really from get real with yourself. Decide, yes, I'm going to do something about making the workplace great. Because it starts with the belief of managers. And in fact, the folks over at the Great Place Institute, the Great Workplace Institute.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Okay.
I do. I mean, Great Place to Work Institute.
Thank you.
There you go.
Oi. That's one of the first things they talk about is for a place to be great, it starts with the managers looking at their beliefs. And so I think that's a good place to start. But then it moves from there, and that is saying, where can I make a difference with my team that's around creating a great workplace? And so that can start with, you know, what are the things that we're doing that really add no value? What are the things that we're doing that add value? And how can we continue to, what can we do to boost the value in the actions and the activities that we're doing? It could be as simple as reshuffling the way work gets done by aligning to strengths. You know, I'm a big believer in strengths. I think there are some drawbacks to it, but I think it's a place to, it's a tactical place to start. And if you don't know your employee strengths, well, then I think it's a good opportunity to take advantage of the free assessment that's out there and learn what your team's strengths are. The other piece that I think goes along with this that's tactical, and it goes back to the manager, you know, I believe that most of us don't really know what we stand for as individuals and as managers, and I think we need to do some work in understanding what are our personal values, because I think that gives insights into, okay, well, then how do I show up as a leader? So I think that's another tactical thing, so a little bit of self-work, a little bit of looking at the work that's going on in the team and involving the team in the conversation of, hey, I want to make this place great for you guys. You spend half your life working. I want this to be a contribution to your life, not, oh, great, I have to go spend another 8 hours in this place that's sucking the soul out of me. So I think that would be another part, another action a manager can take is to say, hey, here's my intention. I need your help to figure this out, and let's put a plan together, and let's manage this plan, and let's keep each other informed about how things are going. So I think it's rolling up the sleeves and just doing the dirty work.
So, and by the way, we can't let the mention of Great Places to Work Institute go by without sending a shout-out to their CEO, China Gorman, who is a friend of the show and just an all-around fantastic person. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, I think that there's a tipping point, right? There's the manager's responsibility to kind of build a team around them. There's probably, I'm imagining, a point, though, where you have to make decisions both as an individual and as a manager of, am I in the right place? How much effort do I put into trying to change this environment versus looking for a new one? And I guess, so two questions out of that. The first one is, you know, have you really identified how to help people find that tipping point and what's right for them? And then kind of the follow-up to that is for the manager themselves, like where does their support come from? If they're the ones who are carrying this heavy load, like how do they take care of themselves?
Great question. And I think, you know, that's why I have such a soft spot for middle management is, you know, they get the pressure from above, they get the pressure from below. You know, and that certainly happens at the C-suite level, but my soft spot is for middle managers. So I think the tipping point, you know, really comes from, you know, making that decision to take on the work, involving the employees. And, you know, with that, as you're pointing out, is there's a lot of, we'll say stuff, because this is a family-friendly radio show, although you did play the Beastie Boys.
yeah, but it was a very call of Beastie Boys.
Yes, it was. I think today managers have got to buck the trend of I'm too busy, I don't have time to develop relationships with my peers. I think a good manager today needs to get a coach, have a mentor. So I think those are some, you know, yes, they're hackneyed, overused in terms of recommendations, but it's really the smart manager who says, I'm going to act on this. So I think that's where that support structure comes to help the manager as they're taking on this work. So get out from behind the desk. Get out there, interact with your peers, your fellow managers, develop a relationship with them. You know, as a consultant, and you, I'm sure you see this too, Duane, you know, we hear all the time, I just don't have time to do this kind of work. I don't have time to improve employee engagement. I don't have time to coach my employees. Well, it's short-term thinking. The long-term impacts of that are your problems just compound and get worse. So it's taking that step and saying, okay, I'm going to develop these relationships. I'm going to nurture them. and I'm going to get myself a coach or a mentor or both. There was another part to your question, and I forgot it, so please make sure you don't let me off the hook.
Yeah, no, I was actually about to bring it back up. The tipping point. How do you know when you've got a lot of work to do with your organization and when you've got a lot of work to do finding a different organization?
Well, I think you know based on, and I'm going to say this personally, you know, how I have personally experienced it is that I just can't bring myself to do the work that's needed. And whether it's because I no longer fit in or my ideas are just not going to take root because, you know, there's another side to this equation, and it's the employee's willingness to help make this happen. Right? It's not just the manager who magically waves her wand and suddenly the workplace is great. The employees have to be willing to take this on as well. So if they're not willing, if they've let the apathy swallow them, then your efforts as a manager to make the workplace great, you know, it's an uphill battle, and you have to ask yourself, do you have it in you to do it? Now, if you answer that question yes, the tipping point comes when you start to see the shift in your team and their willingness to roll up the sleeves and do the good work. That trust starts to deepen between you and them and amongst them. I think that's when you start to see the tipping point to this work actually taking root.
So it sounds like it has a lot to do with kind of beasting up yourself in some ways.
It is about beasting up yourself.
We're going to make this happen. It's going to happen. hey, you
I'm already seeing the tweets about it. So
you mentioned in pre-show, talk a little bit. I am always fascinated with HR practitioners or those of us in the HR community, even if we're not practitioners anymore per se, who spend their time giving back, who spend their time talking with other organizations, who go out of their way to interact with kind of the next generation of our profession. And you mentioned that you were doing, I think it was last night, you had a class you were teaching at one of the local universities there in Sacramento. Can you talk a little bit about that? I'm interested. What were you doing? What are you teaching? Who are you talking to?
Yeah, so this is a program, it's a certificate program that is designed for, believe it or not, business analysts. And, you know, a lot of the work that we do in our consulting is oftentimes either in the IT space or in the culture space. You know, very extremes, but the two definitely are related. And what we find is that business analysts, there's a real need for analytical skills within the workplace. Always has been, but it's certainly becoming, you know, a bigger need that we're seeing. So this program is designed for either business analysts today who are, you know, readying themselves to be more competitive in the labor market, or I see a lot of moms who are returning or needing to return to the workplace, recognizing they've got to polish up their resume, make themselves look more attractive to a potential employer. So what we do is we run them through two kind of disciplines. There are the leadership disciplines, and then there are the, you know, very technical analytical disciplines, and we merge them together. So the class that I teach is either the leadership class or a class that is around how do you gather information and how do you facilitate groups to be able to get to the business outcome that you want. And a big underlying current to all of this work is that, hey, you're working with human beings, so you've got to develop relationships with these folks. How do you do that? What does that look like? So that's kind of – those are the big rocks, if you will, about what the class – what the program is about.
Okay. And what do you think is – like the biggest takeaway that you'd like these students to leave with? What would you, if they get nothing else out of this class, and hopefully they will get more than one thing, but what do you think is the biggest challenge that's going to be facing them in this next tree of the workplace that we talk about?
Well, gosh, only one thing. That's a tough one.
You can pick two then. You can pick two.
Well, I think what we see with analysts is that they shy away from having the difficult conversations with their sponsors, and oftentimes sponsors are executives. And what I want them to walk away with are the tools to help them feel confident to take on the difficult conversations, to take on, having, sharing controversial, if you will, information, because it's the right thing for the business. And that's a scary proposition for most anyone. But when you are an analyst speaking out against popular beliefs, it's not easy. So I think I want them to walk away having the confidence that they've got the tools to be able to do that. The other piece, because I'm a pretty aspirational guy and, I bang the drum that you spend half your life working, it better be a contribution to your life. So I spent a lot of time motivating them to look at, you don't have a job, but you have a body of work. You have a calling. And how do you approach your work so that when you look back on your career, that you can say, this is what I created and this is who I've helped. So that's kind of the more aspirational, pump you up kind of piece that I want them to walk away feeling good.
Nice. I think it's a good lesson. Good lesson for everyone to learn, I think. We've got about 3 minutes left. You've got a book that's kind of in play that's coming around. Talk about that a little bit.
Sure. So the current working title is The Optimistic Workplace, and I'm still messing around with the subtitle, but really what it's about is looking at two key elements of that create the optimistic workplace, humanizing the workplace and making meaningful work. And it's breaking apart, what does that look like? How do I do that? So it's a why book and a how book to make the workplace great. Written for middle managers and any leader who's willing to take on the task of making the workplace something that's meaningful for people in their lives.
Nice. And when do you what's your target for having that out to the market?
Well, so it gets into an agent's hand at the end of this month, which is rapidly approaching, and then if
it is indeed
all goes to, what's that?
I said it is indeed.
Yeah. And then, the writing starts next month, so I would imagine 2015 is when the book would probably be out, would be my guess.
Okay. Well, we'll make sure that we keep an eye out for that. It sounds good stuff. We've got about 2 minutes left. Very quickly, explain to everyone listening why you've never been to a hockey game.
I'm a football fan, and hockey in California has never really been a big deal. And now all of a sudden it's like it's hot, 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 and I just never really kind of got into it. So it's very practical.
Well, it's always nice. I like to, when I get to chat with people, I like to find opportunities for self-growth. Hopefully everyone else looks for the same. So here's an opportunity for you. I know that the HR Puckheads community would welcome you into the fold if you would like to go catch a few games. You don't have to be a Kings fan. I want to be very clear about that. Those of us who are St. Louis Blues fans would welcome you. Welcome to be part of our tribe. But really, any team is okay. We would just, check it out. I think you'll enjoy it. It's a good time. And we could always use more fans in our community.
I will take that on.
All right. That's a good goal. So 30 seconds or less, what's your biggest goal for next year? What's your big bogey? What are you after?
The big goal next year is to finish the manuscript and grow Switch and Shift offline.
Perfect. And where can people find you one more time if they want to continue this conversation with you?
Yep. So they could go to our blog at switchandshift.com. They can follow me on Twitter, which is at Shawmu, not the killer whale, but Shawmu. And LinkedIn, I'm there as well.
Fantastic. Well, Sean, thanks for joining me today. Thanks for coming on. Good stuff, very enlightening. I like your message, and I hope that hope it's resonating with folks. And I hope you continue to beast it up through the rest of this year. We're going to go out with one of my favorite bands, Counting Crows. So have a great day. Thanks for stopping by, everybody, and we will see you in the very near future. Long December.
there's reason to believe maybe this year will be better than the last.